Good morning, everyone. And I'm Patrick Fältström, chair of ESSAC. This is bright and early in the morning. I know that not enough, many of us have not had enough coffee yet, which I think is good to get bring into the minutes of this meeting. That said, we in ESSAC would like to thank you and ATRT for the ability to meet with us, and we thank you very much also for the questions that you sent to us beforehand. I have myself, for your information, been going through these questions and shared some of my thinking with the rest of ESSAC, and if it's not the case that you have any different suggestions of how to do this, what I will do is to open up the discussion by briefly giving my own personal view on each one of these issues. When I open up from, if not any other ESSAC member doing it, or regardless of who is doing it, the comment should only be taken as a personal reflection of the question, and not something that is that has been in any way anchored within ESSAC as a whole. So if we, and I encourage all of the ESSAC members to speak up here. If needed. Yes, please, Brian. Yes.
Thank you, Patrick, and thank you for your time at this early hour. Just something with respect to the questions, so you're aware of the context. The questions themselves are fall in two categories. 1 through 6 are questions that we developed that are becoming top-of-mind questions for us as we're working through our early analysis and assessment and data gathering. The balance of the questions are questions that we developed having read comments. And so those represent thoughts received from the community, following questions, questions designed to get deeper thought. None of these questions represent preliminary conclusions. Some of these questions could end up in inquiries that lead to a recommendation, some may not. So that's what you're looking at, just to give you some context, and really we're still in the data gathering phase, and welcome any and all views.
Thank you. So if we start with the first question related to the GNSO PDP, what I personally felt and heard from a few others that discussion I've been on is whether it is really the case that one should discuss the GNSO PDP by itself. Maybe there is a more general issue with the various PDPs and discussions that we have within ICANN, that they are very much silo-based instead of topic-based, which means that regardless of where the actual PDP or developmental processes happen, it might be the case that cross-constituency input or input from other like parties that are not directly involved in wherever the basis of the development is happening is coming in too late. It's also the case that I will come back to for the other questions that it's also a little bit difficult maybe to evaluate a specific PDP or a specific issue, a specific general issue, when many of us, specifically us in ESSAC at the moment, are so completely full of issues that are directly related to the new DTLD process. So to some degree, it might be a little difficult to distinguish the trees from the forest. So from my perspective, I think it's a little bit difficult to go back. It's a little bit difficult to answer the question because I think it's a more general issue here. And just saying that the problem is on the GNS PDP, I think is wrong because I think it has to do with any of the process itself that needs to be more topic based and less stakeholder based. But I would like to open up the floor for others. And I'm really surprised if I am the only ESSAC member that you have an opinion here.
Any examples of, with respect to your comments of inputs coming in late, the broader processes?
Oh, sure. Of course, we can use the new G2LD process as an example, or we can take the IDM CCTLD fast track as another example that is of something that is done elsewhere. That I think some of the input that I think the result of, for example, the new TLD process or some of the issues that were very late changes in the applicant guidebook, for example, could have been brought in earlier if it is the case that we had earlier input from other stakeholder groups than the ones being active in GNSO. If we take, for example, many of the GAC advice and potentially many of the things that we and SAC brought up came in pretty late for various reasons because we simply did not communicate enough earlier in the process without blaming anyone. But I also do know that I personally do have a pretty strong view that I think we should try to have more topic-based discussions within ICANN. So maybe I'm a little bit special here. We're having that view.
I would note that under the affirmation of commitments, this particular issue of the PDP is under paragraph 9.1e, and it directs us to review the PDP in the context of cross community work. So there is actually you're hitting on a point that we need to look into. It's not just the PDP in a silo, as you will. So these are very relevant comments. Thank you.
Avery?
Good morning. Thank you. Avery Doria speaking. I actually wanted to ask a follow-up on that because in terms of talking about earlier input seems to sort of relate to how to fix the current PDP notion. Whereas the idea of sort of doing a different cut at it and doing an issue-based seems to be a more radical rethinking of the policy development process. And I wanted to make sure that I was sort of hearing that correctly, that there was really a difference between the two views that you were giving. And B, if we were to try and look at, I think you're actually the first in our talks here to actually bring up a notion of thinking about a switch to issue-based as opposed to stakeholder-based. Any recommendations on how one would go about making such a fundamental and radical change without, giving any opinion on what I thought of such a change, but just how would one do that?
Thank you for asking me to clarify. I don't think I'm asking to change sort of the PDP to be outside of sort of individual stakeholder groups. I'm more focused on trying to have the discussions more topic-based. And I think that goes back to the scheduling of the ICANN meetings themselves, where I think we could have more topic-based discussions and we should force ourselves to have more topic-based discussions so it's easier to have input earlier in the PDPs. I feel that after I took over from Steve, being the chair of SAC, I feel that, for example, we in SAC, and we still do that, even though we try to solve the problem, we explain the same topic multiple times every ICANN week. And that increases the risk that the discussion floats away in different directions depending on what group we happen to talk with, if you understand what I mean. So I don't think I'm really asking for change in the PDP itself. I'm trying to find a way of getting earlier input. Steve.
Thank you, Patrick. Steve Crocker here. I want to veer away from the specifics of PDP and GNSO for a second, but to expand on exactly the last point that you made about saying the same thing over and over again, and something that goes, I think, to the heart of the dialogue here about are things working right? And I, for the sake of anybody who doesn't understand, I'm here jointly in the capacity of an SAC member and an ATRT member. And not only am I doubly conflicted, I'm triply conflicted because I got to be elsewhere in a few minutes. So with apologies, I'm going to bolt. I spent a significant amount of time last night reading Lyman's excellent report, which is visible, I think, only to the ESSAC folks at this point. It hasn't been distributed. For the benefit of ATRT folks, it does an analysis of the conflict of names, and what happens if you use a name like corp or home that is already in heavy use, and if you allocate it as a TLD, what kind of collisions will take place in local enterprises. It's not my purpose to get into the substance of that report. I'm sure that will all take place. But one of the things that was repetitively on my mind as I read it is we actually raised that issue in conjunction with the original root scaling studies some time ago. And made formal recommendations to the board that there needed to be a second study that was qualitatively different from the kind of scaling studies we're doing on the route to deal with exactly this sort of problem. Now, the way in which we framed it wasn't quite as compelling, perhaps wasn't quite as vivid as later emerged and came up, but it did strike me as puzzling in some sense, and perhaps a signal that we don't have the right level of attention or sensitivity to certain kinds of topics. Some of it is a staffing issue, I think, that over time the ICANN staff has gotten deeper and more knowledgeable about these things. Some of it, I would think, is a bandwidth question, that everything is so urgent and pressed and it's hard to cover things that don't seem to be so immediate. But nonetheless, I did feel that although Lyman's report goes into much greater depth and surfaces a lot more nuances and substance, that the basic issue had been raised some time ago, and it's worth asking why it took this long. And then, of course, we get the issue of, well, why didn't you bring it up before? Well, we did bring it up before. And isn't it awkward to have to make those decisions now? Yeah, but it's better now than never. I think in the context of an ATRT process, that would be one of the things, Mr. Chair, that I would think would be possibly in scope. So that's my little stirring of the pot for this morning.
Yeah, to clarify on that report, the report has been shared with the work party within ESSAC up until yesterday when all of ESSAC saw it. So it's brand new also for large portions of ESSAC. Of course, one could say it's easy to say afterwards that report that now Lyman is working on, that maybe that report should have done like day number two of the whole new GTLD process in GNSO.
I remember quite vividly, because I had lengthy discussions with Dave Piscatello, who brought the issue to our attention, and it was brought by, if my recollection is right, Peter Ford within Microsoft, that there would be issues within enterprises, it was reasonably clear at the time. And then we did some studies of quick studies of what names showed up in the root, and Belkin showed up very high. And so I remember some vigorous discussions about maybe we should suggest that names that had already been contaminated should be prohibited from being allocated. And there was some spirited discussion back and forth about that. And we can pin those dates down, but Lyman, you were at the center of the original root scaling study, so I'm sure it's still quite vivid. But somewhere, you know, within 12 months of the time we started the first study, we had those issues on the table, and so it'd be interesting to know kind of why it didn't rise to the level and where that failure, if one wants to characterize it as a failure.
Adam, did you want to answer?
Thank you. Just a quick note. The AOC uses a phrase in regard to this, which is either serendipitous and fortuitous and blind luck or careful planning. I can't speak to which. But it uses the expression cross-community deliberations. That's not tossing information over the wall or soliciting input and reading it quietly later on. That's actually talking to each other. I'm just noting it as something that we do very, very little in this organization. We seem to think that tossing information over walls, whether it's a little comment or issuing a report, is the way we should be doing business. And maybe if there's more opportunities or the structure's changed to allow or facilitate actual discussions, maybe we'd do better.
Lyman.
Thank you, Patrick. Lyman Chapin. Speaking to Alan's point, and also back to Avery, you were asking for you know, ideas for how we might actually alter the PDP process or change the way we do PDPs. It's my sense that a lot of the difficulties that we get into, that a number of people, including Steve, have just mentioned, arise because when we have fundamentally community-centered processes like the GNSO PDP, although we say, as Alan just said, we say that we have lots of cross-community communication. During ICANN meetings, we try to have as many of these, you know, inter-group meetings as we can. ESSAC, I know, you know, we go around and we talk to as many different groups as we can. But institutionally, I think we're encouraged to imagine that we can, when it comes down to it, complete our work within our individual organization. So a GNSO PDP can be completed by the GNSO. There's an obligation to, you know, have various consultations with other constituencies, but ultimately my sense is that the GNSO feels that it owns the responsibility for completing a PDP. If, and this is just to put an idea out, responding to Avery, if the structures and processes that we had in our constituency groups essentially could not complete in a formal sense without steps that involved other groups, it might encourage us to think that our work, in fact, had to be effectively coordinated with those groups because there would be no way for it to complete without that step. It would essentially force us to do something that we all know we should be doing, and if we always inhabited our better selves, we would do it all the time. But too often, I think, and it's glib to use the term lip service because I think most of us take it much more seriously than that. But in practice, that's what it ends up being. In practice, we end up having lots of meetings where we talk to each other, but we don't really feel an obligation, a formal obligation, to incorporate those discussions into the process whereby we are going to actually complete the work that we're responsible for.
David?
Yeah, I guess one of the things that comes to mind immediately in that sort of discussion is the question of timeliness across institutions, right? The time requirements that are placed upon the GNSO are likely to be somewhat different than the timing requirements that are placed upon ESSAC on a similar topic. And I'm not sure how it would be possible to sort of sync those time requirements such that, if there is a checkbox that ESSAC has reviewed something that's going through the GNSO, where that falls in the context of ESSAC priorities is not something the GNSO can dictate. Possibly, I don't know. It's just one of the issues that I think it probably needs to be taken into consideration when we're actually considering this topic. I think Alan has.
Steve?
Thanks. Alan's previous comment and your comments, Patrick, along with what David said, have reminded me about another reaction I had when I was reading Lyman's report. There is difficulty getting attention across groups, and some of it is, as I suggested earlier, differences in values or attention, but some of it is just plain workload and overload and bandwidth. The idea of having more and more cross-constituency discussions during the ICANN week is something that doesn't scale too well. I mean, everybody is in frenetic mode, and every once in a while we try to change the system and reorganize the meetings, but at the end of the day, there's only n squared time. You're trying to have n squared meetings, and you have a finite amount of time, and it doesn't work too well. So that's something I would commend as a topic that needs to be dealt with broadly. It intersects with something else that I've been chewing on for quite some time. I've watched various groups, not just SAC, although SAC's included, but groups, multiple groups over a period of time, that will do serious work and issue very thoughtful and heartfelt advice, and then sit back and feel unloved, so to speak, that nobody's paying attention to them, that their advice wasn't taken, and it leads to some not excellent behavior of feeling ignored, and so then that sometimes leads to how come you didn't listen to us, and didn't we tell you to do this? And there's some very interesting thresholds between trying to get heard versus trying to feel like you gave us the question, therefore we own the problem, and therefore you must do what we say. That goes too far, and I've had some strong sensitivities about that. But I think the other side of it is, we gave you advice, and it's a matter of both professional courtesy and to help make the system work, to know what happened to that advice, that something should have happened. Even if it didn't get followed, it should get discharged, as opposed to just sitting there. And maybe that's something to work on as a piece of machinery or infrastructure across groups that, and I'm just making this up on the spot here, but some sort of lightweight tracking system or shared understanding of what's top of mind across the different groups, so that you can see if there's an imbalance between something that's raised in one area and has not been things. It's certainly, from the board point of view, we've been asked more than once, what do you do with the advice we give you? How come the GAC gets to give you advice and it's formally required that you have to respond to it? And should we change the bylaws so that we too can be heard? And in fact, my favorite, it came up yesterday, the GNSO said they wanted the authority to be able to give advice like an advisory committee. And I'm thinking there's envy in both directions between ACs and SOs. So anyway, I'm just sort of opening up that topic.
So we have quite a large number of questions to go through and have a long list of people that want to speak. So, Alan?
One more thing, too. Don't feel constrained by the questions. We're here to listen. So if there are other issues beyond these questions that you think are very important to our work, that we're...
Oh, absolutely. But there are a couple of issues among the questions that I want to bring up that I think, that I just won't have time for. Alan?
Just two quick comments. The cross-constituency meetings at ICANN, I don't think are the answer at all. First of all, certainly in at least some of the groups, the work is done at a different level than the stakeholder group or the AC or the SO, and the intersection of any two large groups is just too large to get substantive discussions done on real topics. But with regard to the GNSO PDP, it is open to everyone, and they actively at the beginning of every PDP solicit participation from every AC and SO. But slavery is still against the law in most jurisdictions, and you can't really shackle people to the door, to the chair, and force them to work. So it's getting the people to actually do the, and get involved in the process. Not that the process doesn't allow it, but it doesn't. It just doesn't work as it is right now.
Don.
Thanks, Don Blumenthal. I guess I'm struggling here a little bit because we were focusing on PDP, and in one part of my professional world, I deal with those all the time. But in SAC, I think we're less focused on that process than on some others. I think Steve hit it very squarely in terms of advice being provided, and then just kind of going into the ether. one frustration sometimes I have with ICANN is the bureaucracy. One of the nice things about working on ESSAC is we can start a project and be done in 2 months. It's a pleasure. To me, it's more a situation of fostering an atmosphere of accountability and transparency rather than a checklist. I would hope that it would be just part of the nature of things, that when advice is given or opinions are given, somebody responds, as opposed to making sure it's done through some formal process.
Danny?
I'm just going to support what Steve said there. I think there are a number of recommendations that ESSAC has made that haven't been addressed in my perspective, from an ESSAC perspective, haven't been addressed to ESSAC satisfaction at all. And they've either went to the board or it's been resolved that ICANN staff address those issues, but they remain unresolved. And, you know, what recourse do you have, right? I mean, it's exactly the point that Steve's talking about. And I think that this is a cause of a lot of problems, and I don't think a lot of these things would have been complex early on, but they get more complicated with time, and I think that's problematic. I just wanted to reinforce to you.
Please.
Thank you, Olivier Crepin-Lebrun, for the transcript. Danny, you mentioned that, and the question is, do you think that the ESSAC or other advisory committees should be afforded the same kind of response as the GAC, for example?
In the spirit of multi-stakeholderism, I think that, and professionalism, I think there's an obligation to make sure that that due consideration and some action was taken based on a recommendation that ESSAC provided to the board or to ICANN or to the community. I think that's an obligation. Otherwise, you know, we're spinning our wheels making these recommendations. I mean, we have recommendations that were made 2.5-3 years ago that haven't been addressed. And you know, we don't know where these things reside, and now we're at a point where it's much more problematic. And so if they were considered and aren't a problem, then we should have been told that. Or if we were, you know, if they were considered and weighed with other resources or constraints or other things, and some risk analysis was performed and said we don't believe we need to do that, then that feedback should be provided. I think that's a big part of the issue, is that dialogue that Steve's talking about.
So let me just explain a little bit what I've been doing in coordination with the other SO and ACA chairs to try to synchronize a little bit more what we're doing. We started about 2 years ago to look at how we should try to coordinate a little bit more, what kind of topic areas we are working on. And one of the first things that we encountered, of course, was that me and Heather, the chair of GAC, we agreed that each one of us, each calendar year, probably have time to work on maybe 6 issues, not more than that, 6 to 8 issues or something like that, really deep. I asked the same question to the GNSO council chair that then said, oh, we probably have 35 or 40 issues that we're looking at across all the constituencies. And there immediately we saw a disconnect and a problem, because among the issues that, for example, we in ESSAC are looking at, we cannot devote all our time to issues coming from GNSO. And the question, maybe we can devote maybe 3 of the issues to, and then the question is, what 3 out of those 30 should we look at? And how do we ensure that we are looking at them early enough and at the right time so it's actually useful? What is the selection process? And that's something that we so far don't really have any answer to. But that could be one way of sort of improving the work, because it feels a little bit like each one of the groups, even though we try to help each other, that when we're deciding that we're going to work on a topic, that it's still a little bit too ad hoc and could be resolved a little bit easier. Yes, please.
Thanks. All very good inputs. And just to note at the end of question one, we are engaged we are in the process of engaging an independent expert to assess the PDP process. That's going to happen and be an input to our work. We are looking for groups who are willing to interact with that independent expert. We hope you do. But let me just kind of recap what I'm hearing here, what we've been hearing in other sessions, because a meta question that's been put in front of us is the PDP process broken? We're not convinced that that's the right question, but it is a question. So starting, you know, coming back to the process itself, what I'm hearing is, what's the number of issues that the community is dealing with at any given time? Who puts inputs into the system or process and when? Resources, whether that's human or others provided by ICANN. Timing or sequencing or pacing of the process. The dynamic of cross-constituency interaction. And Don's point, fostering an environment of accountability and transparency in this process. These are all things that we're hearing. Is the process broken? Is it these elements? Is it a combination? Which ones are the most important, you think, in terms of having negative effects on the process? Could you dive a little bit deeper on all of this?
I think from ESSAC perspective, and at the moment, as I said, we are so heavily involved in the new GLD process at the moment, so it will be very much reflected on that specific one, which means that maybe the answers are not like properly reflect the general issue with the PDP. But I think what I hear as the chair of ESSAC from my ESSAC members, I think I hear a problem for us to know when we should pick up specific issues. So it's a timing issue between the constituencies. I hear that the ESSAC members as volunteers want to help, and they do know that they have a contribution to make, but feel a bit frustrated of being a little bit hard to know when to do that and how. I also hear that people, and we from ESSAC, think there is a big difference between having members of ESSAC also participating in other working groups with their individual expertise, and when ESSAC actually looks at the topic. It's very important to see the distinction between the two. And then what Danny points out is that we are currently in ESSAC reviewing and reissuing recommendations that we feel we have issued before, where the discussion around those early recommendations never really ended. I think it's, just like Danny explained, I think it's really important, though, to note that we in ESSAC absolutely recognize that everyone should not sort of listen and do what we are asking to do. Like, people can happily ignore what we are doing. They might come to other conclusions, etc. But people are a bit frustrated that we have not even been able, in certain cases, some cases, have the discussion so we understand why our recommendations were not implemented, if you understand what I mean. So that is what I interpret what you said, Annie, correct me if I'm wrong, when you talk about responsiveness. We just, like, yeah. Let me go to a few other issues that I would like just to mention before we go back into more general discussion. Can we scroll to question 14, please? Because there are a couple of issues which I think are very easy that I just want to mention to you. First of all, regarding the work methodologies regarding accountability and transparency, I want to mention, like I will do on the on our open meeting on Thursday, that we are in ESSAC at the moment working on a disclosure of interest policy where members of ESSAC disclose their interests. We have decided to work on a disclosure of interest as an inclusive mechanism of handling interest instead of, as in some other places of ICANN, a conflict of interest procedures that are that are based on exclusivity. One of the reasons for this is because we in ESSAC have a little bit of problem to exclude the people that actually do have the specific topic skill set. So it's a disclosure of interest policy that we are working on. The next thing that I wanted to mention.
Patrick, yes? When you say problem of excluding members, is that because of resource issues or qualitatively, what's the exclusion or possible
exclusion? The quality of the result. We think it's more important that people get the result and then understand within what context the result was developed. Ram, you're the one that ran this. Do you want to add something to this, or maybe I was clear enough?
Thank you, Patrick. This is Ram. I think you covered it, but just to reiterate, the focus is on ensuring ESSAC is an organization that consists in general of folks who have deep subject matter expertise. And they come from varied backgrounds in industry from various different places. And for ESSAC to do its work and to execute on its studies and its research and things like that and to issue recommendations, we feel that having all of the members engaged is important. And so our approach to making this inclusive is to ensure that members' interests are disclosed in a very open way so that those who read the reports that come out, in our reports we generally say who are the people who were directly involved in the writing of the reports. And our intent is you can look at who was involved in writing the reports, and then you can go and look at what are their interests. Not only what are their affiliations, but also what are their interests, so that in that way we hope that the accountability and the transparency of how we generate these reports is quite open. And for those who are the recipients of reports, they get to understand the biases of the people who come in.
Okay, so can we go to number 8, please? So the question there is, has the community any specific issues or concerns with other aspects of security, civilian resilience that are outside of DNS specific? From our perspective, from ESSAC, absolutely. One of our first recommendations, number 4, was related to IP addressing and source address filtering and related issues, where we now have actually reissued a work party on similar issues. So the routing system and IP addressing has always been and is still of great concern of ESSAC. It's only that DNS is what is discussed at the moment. And related to that, if we scroll a little bit down to number 12, let's see, was it 12? No, it's... Wait a sec. 10, sorry. And one thing that we want to note there is that the IP address and AS numbers are, from an ICANN perspective, quite different from DNS. Because for DNS, ICANN is not only sort of the overall coordinator, but ICANN also run the PDP. Well, for IP addresses, the PDP is run elsewhere. So it's a little bit difficult to compare how the community embraces decisions as the acknowledgement and the to take the issues into account sometimes is within the ICANN PDP, and sometimes it's something that should be taken into account in a PDP run by a different organization. So I would be careful on comparing whether one is better than the other, because they're different and need to be handled separately. And then I just want to mention the last one before I open up for discussion again, and that is on number 2. I'm sorry for forcing you to run back and forth all the time, but I tried to take them in, for me, at least 11 p.m. yesterday evening in logical order. Maybe I said illogical order, I don't know. Number 2 comes back to something that we're discussing at the moment on how we should phrase that in our report, because from our perspective, ICANN will never be able to really include everyone on the planet that use the internet as part of the as active participants. And some of the risks that that we are looking at, or costs associated with the risks that we're looking at ESSAC, are upon the ones that are not reached directly by ICANN, maybe indirectly, but not directly. So some of the issues we are talking about is something that we called cost transfer from the ones that have the interest of some kind of change, but the actual risk related with that change and the cost, if it is the case that the risk is actually sort of the events happen, the cost is on other parties. And when those parties are specifically not active within the ICANN environment, that creates something that we are a little bit nervous about. So we are differentiating between the risk and cost is also taken by the one that have a specific interest from the issues where the risk and cost is transferred to a third party, specifically when the third party are the ones that are not really directly involved in ICANN. Just want to make that point. I think that's approximately what we are talking about, and I see Danny and a few others are nodding. So with that, I don't have any more of the questions that I was thinking of mentioning. Instead, we have another 15 or 16 minutes or something, so I open up the floor again for people to comment and ask questions. Danny?
Yeah, I was going to make a couple of comments, actually. One thing that I think in the future, not immediately, excuse me, might change some of the dynamics here related to the names and number, or the AS numbers and IP addresses, is the resource PKI and the architecture of that and the obligations that are likely going to be on ICANN related to that, and certainly the interactions with the regional internet registries or the NRO and so forth. I think it's not as problematic right now because there's sort of not an operational role for ICANN there. But if the resource PKI impacts routability of addresses on the internet, then certainly it's a effective control point or a point of attack or failures or other things. So I think that some of the complexities surrounding that are going to come to ICANN in the next couple of years. I don't think it's an immediate concern other than things like trust anchors and the architecture and whatnot, and it's fairly complicated, but I do think it's something that should be on the on the horizon. One other brief comment I wanted to make is, as an SAC member, I also wonder about what amount of legal oversight ICANN as an organization should have had over SAC and the advice they provide or the statements that they make, as opposed to some amount of autonomy. So if there are things we may or may not say, or things that reports may or may not say, and they may not find their way out of ICANN because of legal risk, then I think that does a disjustice to the community and puts things at risk to both direct stakeholders as well as to sort of internet consumers and whatnot. And I think that's something that needs some serious consideration.
David?
Okay, on the topic of IP addressing in question 10, from an accountability and transparency perspective, ICANN is involved at sort of the highest level in terms of approving global policies associated with IP address allocation and AS numbers. I guess the complication becomes when the policy mechanisms that are defining those global policies are outside of the context of ICANN. How can ICANN be accountable to its community for those policies, and how, particularly in the context of ESSAC, when there are security and stability implications associated with those policies, when they're applied in a global context that may not be apparent in a regional context. For example, the implications of one region running out of address space and having to go into a market-based regime where other regions have additional address space.
Thank you.
Yes, I just have a couple of questions. And it's all terminology, and so terminology and how things are written are interpreted different ways. But when you see the phrase DNS, you think of domain names and not IP numbers. I think when we've used it in the past, we think the domain name system includes IP numbers, and that was sort of, I think, what the way the wording of the question was. So I think it was question 8 when you don't need to scroll back, it's okay. I think when it was like, are there issues outside of the DNS that are security-related, and the specific issues you raised were IP number-based. But I have a couple questions about the relationship between, and this could be sensitive in both cases, the RIR structure and the policy being made outside of ICANN, and how you see the correlation between the CCTLD space, because CCTLDs also have regional groups, but they also have the CCNSO, where policy is made, and then the RIRs seem much more independent, and then the ASO relationship. I'd be curious about how you see that and if there's any challenges to that or lessons learned. And then also, I think, to Danny's point, I think it'd be interesting for the review team to know if there were instances when an ESSAC report was not released because of some kind of legal liability construct or some kind of review. This is the first I've heard of that. So I think that would be interesting to know what that environment is like and situation and relationship. So.
So regarding the various policy development processes, personally, I don't see any problem with policy development process being in multiple places. Historically, all the policy development processes related to anything that today can be related to telecom was done within ITU and only one organization. And to some degree, personally, I have strongly the view that sort of, if I use the word competition between standards organizations, I see that as a healthy thing, where questions might move from one organization to another. That said, I think the various organizations can learn of each other, and not only between, for example, the DNSO, the DNS policy development process within ICANN, and, for example, the discussions that are going around among the CCTLDs, where they should do certain discussions, but also I think David brought up another good example with the RIRs, where the RIRs themselves, among themselves, have looked at each other's PDPs and copied sort of good things and learning from each other. So I think it's hard to I think personally it's both hard and wrong to say which one of these works the best, because I think the best PDPs from my perspective are the ones that really are developed bottom up and are not cast in stone, but the ones that are allowed to evolve, including, which I think is important, that certain aspects are allowed to move from one PDP to another where you have gray areas. Then regarding ESSAC reports and recommendations, whether they have been implemented or not, we actually got a question yesterday whether we had any ESSAC work or recommendations at all that had not been published, without talking about what reasons. And at first we thought no, none, but then some people whispered my ear and said no, we actually have two or something that we have not that we have not published lately. Regarding illegal legality and whether we can say certain things depending on who we are as individuals, I think Danny, you have to clarify that a little bit, because I think personally that discussion has come up when we're talking about specific recommendations, what we actually should say or not.
Yeah, so one of the examples that I was referring to was coming out of Beijing, the FAQ and the clarification we were going to make when a FAQ isn't actually even an operational document within ESSAC, and then the apparent required review of ICANN legal of that document, and then the determination that it wouldn't be published at all if anyone objected to that, and it was on a contentious issue, and so that's the specific issue I'm referring to. There are other things though. The notion on ESSAC of putting legal footers on emails and saying you can't share this, you can't forward this, and other things, to me gives me some concern, because I think that aligned with the disclosure of interest notions, that the people that participate in ESSAC are technical experts there for technical merit, and people should apply a filter based on their disclosure of interest, yet at the same time, the organizations they represent, the expertise in those organizations, could probably contribute and make the quality of the work product better. So they can't consult those folks for various topics. And so those are the sorts of things that I'm referring to. I think there are actually other examples where things have come to ESSAC or a subset of ESSAC and not found their way out. But I'm not going to speak on behalf of other people there.
Jim?
So, Jim Galvin, for the record, I'm sorry, I'm pausing for a moment because I'm just trying to take in a little bit more of what Danny said. I wanted to make one clarification about ESSAC documents being published or not and when they're held back. The couple of examples that we had, though, of documents not being published were from issues that were raised inside of ESSAC. They were not from issues that had been raised by others, and we were asked for an opinion and asked to say something, because in those situations, we have actually always responded and always published something, even if it was simply an indication that there was nothing to say. So in that respect, we have a 100% publication effect. We didn't make that clarification in the ALAC meeting yesterday when the question was asked, but it's something that I had thought about afterwards and realized that the ones that weren't published were because ESSAC had raised an issue within itself and examined it and was questioning whether or not there was something to say here and came to the conclusion there was nothing to be said. And so we just chose not to proceed with that and not publish that. I think my concern with some of the things that Danny is saying, which is not intended to take away from the fact that those are issues and questions that have to be answered and explored fully and completely, is those are discussions that we're having within ESSAC about how we're going to proceed about, and so they're around the disclosure of interest policy that we're developing. So the question of whether or not to put a statement at the bottom of our mail list, every message, you know, not distributing that, the question of whether or not you're allowed to disclose anything that's going on in the meetings, you know, these are discussions that we're having. So they're not actually an issue, per se. I mean, I think that's the way I would characterize it. They're not an issue outside of ESSAC yet, because we haven't declared consensus about where we're going forward. And that's the one concern I have about what you're saying here.
That's fair, Jim. I agree with that on the disclosure of interest stuff. That's something we're newly considering, and it feels to me like we're sort of trying to tighten the noose around what finds its way out of ESSAC or what dialogue happens where. That's my observation, my opinion. That's sort of that specific topic is orthogonal of the issue of, you know, of the statement of work and I guess structurally even the fact that things that ESSAC says, what amount of oversight or review is done, for example, by ICANN Legal, or what advice is given to maybe you guys in your capacity as chairs versus to the entire ESSAC versus to a document, and that's not clear to me, but it does feel to me in my participation and my read of the emails on the ESSAC mailing list that it has most certainly influenced things that ESSAC has or hasn't done. And that gives me some concern as a member of ESSAC and a member of the community and an operator in this community.
Aubrey?
Thank you. Aubrey Doria speaking. I wanted to ask a clarifying question because I'm not sure I understood. Was it a question of something not being released because legal said not to release it, or something not being released because ESSAC said we will not subject it to legal oversight? And when you were speaking, I just wasn't sure which of those was the issue.
Do one of you guys as chairs want to respond, given that you...
So I'll speak a bit from the historical perspective and what we do. I mean, ESSAC, when it publishes, it forms its own consensus about what it wants to do. Our documents are not in any way required or obligated to be reviewed by ICANN Legal and then subjected to anything that comes from them. We have historically, though, from time to time, recognizing the importance and significance and broad effects of the documents, actually offered them to members of the legal team to be reviewed just to get an opinion. We have never been obligated to take any of the advice that they have offered. And in fact, we have taken some advice and not taken other advice and then still published the documents, so we've never been held back from publication. But there's nothing special about that. We do that with our documents with other groups, too. We've asked for comments and advice prior to publication from time to time, and we take that input and then we decide what to do with it and go forward with it.
But let me, before I let Olivier in here again, let me just say that the discussion that we currently have as part of this or extended discussion around the disclosure of interest that we have at the moment, I do see that we have a strong consensus within ESSAC that we have to create a work environment where all individuals, irrespective of what environment they are themselves, bound by their employer or whatever, that the individuals need to be able to contribute fully in the capacity, and that whatever they are bringing to the table should be taken into account and must be possible to be taken into account by ESSAC as a whole. So what we are looking at here is how to implement that so that people are comfortable. So we are looking at all different kind of things from enforcing similar rules on all ESSAC members to individual disclosure of the individuals to each other, but only internal in ESSAC, how that local environment that you operate yourself as an individual, how that is. Exactly where we will end up there is something that we are not finished with yet. But we are discussing that. But the goal is something that we absolutely have agreement on, and that is that we have an obligation to ICANN as an advisory committee to be able to bring things forward, full stop. I don't see any problem with that. So what we're talking about is how to do that, how to be able to have discussions with the external parties, and as Danny says, to make sure that everyone in every ASAC member know what's going on. Let me use that sort of layman language. Danny?
One more comment. I guess sort of the crux of my concern is that as an ASAC member, I'm not sure when ICANN legal review something that ESSAC would like to publish and what amount of influence they have over that. And I've seen artifacts clearly illustrated on the mailing list that ICANN legal has influenced statements that ESSAC may or may not have made. And so that's sort of the crux of my, I don't think it should be subjective. I think it should be transparent about what's provided there and what risks are being mitigated by ICANN legal reviewing those things and what finds its way out of ICANN and what doesn't. And so couple ICANN legal review and that amount of oversight or sort of veto power with a disclosure of interest, a confidentiality policy that hasn't necessarily existed, and you're tying the hands of the ESSAC members to comment on certain things. That's sort of, it's that intersection that gives me concern. I understand the need for disclosure of interest and for people to work in trust groups and so forth, but it's sort of the intersection of those two things that gives me some concern.
Jim?
Yeah, so I want to go back to what I said before in responding to what you're saying, Danny. While I agree that those are important questions and things that have to be answered and fully discussed, what I don't want is to have any confusion inside the ATRT in the review that these are issues that we see as we create our disclosure of interest policy and we're trying to decide how we want to deal with them. We have not had these problems to date. You know, we've never been, our publications have never been held back by ICANN Legal. They've never been influenced in a way that ESSAC has objected to. I mean, anytime we've done that review, we've always told full ESSAC that we ran the document through them and sent the red line out to the committee so that people could see what changes were made and we could still get consensus on it. I'm just trying to, what concerns me is that you're bringing up internal ESSAC discussions and they don't represent a consensus of what's actually happening. It's a point that's under discussion right now inside. I'm concerned that you're raising issues that they're going to interpret as something which is a real issue and it hasn't been yet. It's because we're trying to work our way through it.
So to be clear, I believe it has been an issue. It was an issue with a fact that was going to be published after Beijing that we deviated from our operational procedures for because we don't have the notion of a fact within ESSAC, and ICANN legal reviewed it, and then the advice we were given is that if anyone objects, it won't be published. That is a real issue that occurred just a couple of months ago. And so I don't want to dig into that specific issue. I want to say there's a meta issue and some interdependencies here, and that's sort of what
the reason why the FAQ was not published was that we didn't have consensus around it, full stop. That was the reason. Don
Blumenthal. I was going to suggest that too, if that was the subject of the of Danny's comment. You know, we tried to put something together, and we just did not get consensus. I do want to provide another perspective to this disclosure of interest, though. In some settings, it's possible to recuse, but we made the decision, or are working on a decision, possibly, that it's better to have the expertise, but I put it on the record so that people can judge fairly. And to be honest, to me, that's part of this whole accountability and transparency process as it applies to ESSAC. Pure and simple, it's not ICANN legal, it's our looking at ways to make sure we come out with the best product, but make sure that our processes are clear.
Olivier?
Thank you, Patrick. Olivier Crevin-Blanc speaking. Would an opening up of the ESSAC discussions leading up to the drafting of an ESSAC advice be, in your view, detrimental to the public interest, or would it be beneficial to the public interest?
I don't hear what you're saying. You have to talk into the microphone, please.
Okay, sorry. It's difficult to have the mic on the left and you on the right.
You don't have to look at me while speaking.
I'll look
you
at the screen.
Talk into the microphone.
I'll end up cross-eyed. Would an opening up of the process by which ESSAC produces SAC advice, the internal deliberations and the discussions and so on leading up to a document, would, in your view, that be detrimental, or would it be positive to the public interest?
Can you expand a little bit about what you mean by opening up?
Right. By opening up most of the, let's say, take the PDP process. You've got mailing lists, you've got wiki pages, the work leading to the final result, the final report of a PDP is all open and transparent, etc. I'm struck by listening to your discussions that this is, although the final report of an ESSAC advice does provide a lot of information about the people involved, etc., there is no way for the community to see that process as it takes place. Now, I don't know why that is the case, and the reason why I'm asking the question is it might well be that it is not in the public interest for this to be the case. But then again, it might be in the public interest, and this is where my question lies. In your point of view, you're probably the best to judge, since you do know what the process is. Would it be, in your view, in or not in the public interest?
Ram.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Ram. I don't know if it's really appropriate to frame this as a public interest question, because typically the issues that we deal with, the topics that come up are topics that we believe have significant impact or some real impact on security and stability of the domain name system. And from our perspective, that by itself is a public interest issue. At least that's the way I look at it. That by itself is a public interest issue. Now, I do have a pretty definite opinion about the way we work. The fact that the conversations are happening inside of, in a closed loop, if you will, inside of the ESSAC, among ESSAC members, allows me, for instance, freedom to express opinions, to ask questions that I would perhaps curtail myself from doing if I knew that this was going to be not only out in the public view, but also subject to interpretation, which may have nothing to do with the reason why I'm asking these questions. Because folks who, audiences from the outside, who watch our deliberations, can sometimes draw conclusions, some of which may be political in nature or may have other agendas associated with it, when inside of ESSAC, we're often asking questions and working on issues that have to do with specific technical or research or details like that. So the net of it is that I think the current methodology actually works, and the output really is in the public interest.
So we have two more people that want to speak. Let me just first mention that the actual process we are using with the work parties, etc., how we deliberate, that is part of our operational procedure. So that is documented, just so we're not misunderstanding here. Marike.
Yeah, Marike Keo. I just want to make the statement that a lot of things that are discussed within ESSAC are quite sensitive. And so partly we have to keep that in a very closed and trusted environment, because should some of these issues that people within ESSAC, you know, feel that, yes, we can discuss in a closed community, be made public, it could be detrimental to actually the Internet.
Avery, the last person to speak.
Okay, thank you. One of the presumptions that we've been making for ICANN, for our work and others, is that openness and transparency is the default, except for when there is a specific reason for closing. And certainly understand security as a specific reason for closing. I'm not sure that I totally understand embarrassment or confusion as a reason for closing, because we're all stuck with that all the time. So I'm wondering, has there ever been consideration to a notion of transparency, except for when the issue is one that might actually pose a security threat, as opposed to having adopted a everything is closed until we decide to release it, which makes ESSAC pretty much different than the entire trend that we're trying to take in the rest of the organization of a default of openness, except for when there's a reason to close.
We are discussing about this issue now and then, and the problem is, of course, how to run the process of knowing when we are when something is not part of what can be open. And until we really have an answer to that, we every time we come to the conclusion that we should continue to run it the way we do. But yes, we are talking about it now and then. Yes.
So, thanks. Very quickly, I know people need to go. Just to wrap up, our timeline is we are going to put pen to paper toward the end of August, drafting proposed recommendations. We're going to publish in mid-October, propose final recommendations in our report, issue the final report December 31st. So your inputs continue to be welcome. We look forward to your comments. I would like to explore or hear from you a little bit more about the decision-making and criteria you use in deciding when to provide a report to legal and when not. That was a very interesting question. We didn't get to explore more. And any of these questions you want to come back to us with, we have an email. It's open. Feel free to provide inputs. Very much appreciated. Thank you.